I just want to recap a few things from last week because I'd like to continue. Some of you were here and some were not, but I did want to continue on what we were talking about last time. So I had brought up the idea that in the traditional, original, or classic Buddhist teachings, there's this idea of reaching or attaining enlightenment, which is known as nirvana in the Sanskrit language or nibbana in the Pali language. And I had said that some people here may have heard of that or have some idea in their own lives about that's something that they think about or wanting to achieve or attain. And then I also said that in a group this size, I'm sure there are lots of people here who don't particularly think that way, that enlightenment or nirvana or whatever idea you have, that just may not be part of your thought process. And it's not a right or wrong, but it's just we all come to these teachings and practices for a whole variety, a whole range of reasons and what we want out of it and goals. And I'd also said that I don't think at all in terms of nirvana. It doesn't come up in my mind at all. I'm not saying that you should or shouldn't. The Buddha was very, no question, was very clear about this idea. But I was just saying for me, it just happens that that's just the way it works for me. But what I mentioned that I am very interested in, and I would say really is the most important thing in my whole life, is I'm very interested in living and thinking and acting and being in a way that leads me to be as, I'll use some words that we'll explain more about them later, but as awake as I can be, as really as enlightened as I can be, as free as I can be, as wise as I can be, as free from clinging as I can be, as loving and compassionate as I can be. And we could add a whole bunch or more adjectives in there. That's something that I take very, very seriously, and I would say it's really the motivation or intention for my whole life. And that may be true for many people in here. I'm not saying I don't get caught up in other things or that I don't have other things that are of importance to me through the course of my day or my life, but on the deepest level, if you want to say on the highest level, that's really what, for me, my whole life's about. And again, I want to be really clear. I'm not suggesting that anybody here should think in those terms, but I just was putting that out with the idea that I think you could say, this could be argued, what I'm about to say, but I think you could say that if you are living and acting in ways that they're trying to head in those directions of, about being as awake and as light and as loving and as wise and as free as you can be, you're actually doing all the things that the Buddha was talking about, whether you have some idea of nirvana or not. For me, I'm really interested in how the quality that I'm bringing actually moment to moment into my life. And I was suggesting that, you know, I think those are important qualities and that I put it out there for everyone who was there to reflect to see what your life is about in the deepest or highest sense. What's it really all about? What do you want your life to be about? What's most important to you? And you may have your own list, but I'll bet for other people you may use your own words, but it would be, for many people, there are some of those, I'd call them Dharma qualities. You've come to a place that it's about something in particular. So I was making an assumption that everybody here, at least on some level, thinks that these, what I'm calling Dharma qualities, are at least a good idea. Because that's what this place is about. But this is about something in particular. So I'm assuming everybody is at least thinks that there's something here that's a good idea about that. So assuming that we're going to sign up for, yes, I think it's a good idea to cultivate these qualities in ourselves, then I'm suggesting that all of us, I'm including myself, everyone here in the room, we all need help. We can all look into our lives and see areas in which, you know, things are going well and we're kind of on top of things and we've kind of got our act together and it's working. And then we all have areas where we're bumping our head up against the wall. It's the same old thing. We're getting caught in the same types of suffering and same areas in our lives. And it'll be a mix for all of us. And some of us may have a lot more areas of suffering and others maybe in a phase in life where maybe not so much, but we all have the happiness and the joy of, at least hopefully we've all experienced some, and we've also all experienced the suffering. It's a mix. So as we're going to head forward, we could use some tips or some guidance or some help. everything we're talking about then are what we might call skillful means, guidance. That's really what the Buddha was about, is to help us in what can we do? We all have a good intention. We all want to be free from suffering. I know that's true. And we still see that it's not always so easy, so we could use some help. So then what I wanted to talk about tonight and the next week is what are we going to do? How can we start applying some of the teachings in ways that could help us move in those, what I call, wholesome directions? And I had something in mind for this week that I don't remember if I mentioned it last week, but I'm going to put it off to next week because I got an email that I thought was interesting and I wanted to use it to talk about. I just got this week. I was teaching in San Francisco, and after my talk, somebody sent me an email. And so I want to read you just a little bit of his message and then talk about a few of the things here. Before I do, I have to qualify one thing so that hopefully I don't want to get anyone triggered by one piece of this, is I'd used a political example. He refers to it here, and so my politics happen to be pretty liberal, and one of the things I was sharing about is some of the issues I'd had with our current administration and with President Bush and how some of the things were difficult with me around that. So because that's going to get mentioned here, I just want to preface everything by saying, and I said this to the group in San Francisco too, my point is not, I'm not trying to make a political point here about politics at all. Yeah, I don't want to make an assumption that we all have the same politics. The point is not my political view, and if you happen to be more conservative politically, that you could substitute, when here it talks about President Bush, just substitute in Clinton or something, or some liberal politician, and then the analogy completely works. And I just want to, that's the point. It's not the politics. It's just to make the analogy work for you is the important thing. So let me just read a little of this. He says, Hi, Richard. I've had a question since attending your talk last Sunday night in San Francisco. I struggled a bit with what you said about President Bush and your intention to make room for him in your heart, despite at times your intense dislike of him and his policies. I came away feeling that maybe you had sent a message unintended that we, quote, should, unquote, not feel animosity or anger towards Bush, that acceptance through understanding, quote, should be, unquote, the response if one is truly a Buddhist. It was almost as if you were censoring your more un-Buddhist feelings and values. I wondered where authenticity fits into a person's feelings and realizations about the many damaging things happening in the world. I guess I would make a distinction between the person I don't like and their behavior or actions. I would worry if the truly compassionate people turned passive in response to Bush and the policies of his administration because those people wanted to meet certain spiritual standards, accepting change is inevitable, etc. To try to feel differently would seem to create inner conflict, tension, contradiction, etc. on one level. It seems to make Zen a belief system to adhere to. I think given the chance, you would not recommend trying, quote unquote, to be compassionate and didn't intend to send a message that message. I had shared in San Francisco that I have an intention. I have an intention to live in a way in which no beings, no living beings, are ever shut out of my heart. It's an aspiration I have. And that's a real aspiration that I take very seriously, to live in a way that no being is ever shut out of my heart. And it goes back to that list I rattle off of, how can I live in a way to be as awake as possible, as mindful, as free, as enlightened as possible, as wise as possible, as loving, as compassionate as possible. And so, of course, by definition, for all of us, until we're Buddhas ourselves, by definition, there are places in us that aren't yet fully free and awake and enlightened and loving and compassionate. There's going to be some places where we get caught. So the question is, how do we work with that? It wasn't that I was supposed to feel any way or not any way around in this example with President Bush, but you can pick any example in your life. But what do I do when these things come up? How do I work with them when they come up? Because it's real easy when we have strong feelings or there's a lot of energy behind something. It's very easy. It actually colors our perception. So, you know, Bush really seems to be an idiot. You know, there's evil people in the White House or whatever. I mean, it really seems that way. But there are other people who are looking at the exact same set of circumstances and people and saying, you know, finally we've got some people who are putting us on the right track and who think people like me are crazy. So which one is right? I have my opinions about which one is right, but for the point I'm trying to make here is our perceptions get colored. And we take our perceptions for reality and we get caught up in it. We don't realize it's just a perception. It, when we start to try to live in a way that's more awake, we can just know. The first step is, it's part of our basic mindfulness practice to know, oh, there's a lot of aversion here. Rather than just tumble down that road and be caught up in it, I have to bump everything up against what's my deepest intention. And I'm grumbling like, well, I don't want to love President Bush because he's this and he's that. So I was talking with a friend. This was just before the 2004 election. I just said, what am I going to do? I've got to find some kind of equanimity. I'm completely out of balance. I'm suffering and I just can't get free. And he suggested I have a little altar at home where I meditate. It's got a little Buddha statue. He said, well, my suggestion is to put a picture of President Bush on your altar when you're meditating. I had to face, what's my aspiration? Not just when I feel like it. I took this aspiration. I didn't realize what I was signing up for. No living beings ever put out of my heart. Okay, let's see. Bush, yep, living being. Okay, what am I going to do? Put the president picture of Bush on the altar. The interesting thing is, how do we work with these, with our edges? I don't want to say that we should feel anything, and I didn't say that. I actually don't like the word should. But I want to be careful. Actually, I do like it in certain circumstances, because I really do want to say, in a healthy sense, I do think people should be as kind as they can. And I do think people should be loving and compassionate. And people should treat each other well. And there's a lot of things where I would use the word should. Where I wouldn't use the word should is what I call in the unhelpful or maybe unskillful way, which is kind of judgment, where we really start to, it's where we're really hard on ourselves and judging on ourselves. Wow, I'm supposed to feel this way and I don't. And we're beating ourselves up and we're tearing ourselves down and we don't have that love and compassion for ourselves. That's where I would take the should out. In any moment, you have whatever experience you have. There's no should about it. It just is what it is. The only question is, how do we move forward? So I'm not going to sit up here and tell you that I've never had any difficult feelings for President Bush. It's not true. There are two pieces there. One is, it would be nice to clear out the reactive places in me where the difficult feelings never arise in the first place. I don't know if that's humanly possible. I haven't gotten to that where, you know, I never have any difficult reactions to anything. I don't personally know anyone who's gotten to that point. Even some of the teachers that I've worked with who I respect tremendously, at least the ones who are willing to share about themselves, and to others I can't comment on. So I don't know for some of them. So that's one whole piece of strengthening our wisdom and our compassion so that the reactive places come up for us less and less. And there are some of the great masters. Some of you know a great Thai meditation master. If you've ever met him, he's just very inspiring. Ajahn Jumnian, who comes around the Bay Area at least once a year. He says he's never had an angry thought for 25 years. So it may be that it's possible, you know, to attain some of these states of being. In the meantime, we take what we get. One piece is freeing up the reactive mind. And the second is, when there is a reactive mind, what are we going to do with it? Traditionally in Buddhist teachings, it's considered that what's called sila, S-I-L-A, in the Pali language, which is the morality piece, is kind of considered the foundation. That before we go off and do all this fancy meditation and all these practices, that it's important to start from a place of these precepts we live by. Non-harming, not stealing, being wise and skillful around our sexuality, wise speech. It's really the foundations of how we act and show up in the world. That's considered foundational. And then from that, we also add on wisdom practices and concentration practices and all these other things we do. There's actually something more foundational than the sila, than the morality, and that's self-compassion. So I like to teach that the starting point for anything, even before you take on the sila piece, is compassion for ourselves. Knowing that despite our best intentions, we're still going to get ourselves into trouble. We're still going to fall on our face sometimes. We're not going to do it perfectly. And even when we take on the seal of the morality and we say, you know, I do want to start to live in a way with less harming and not taking that which doesn't belong to me, non-stealing, and being wise around sexuality, not causing harm and suffering with it, because, you know, it's such a powerful energy and it can create a lot of trouble, as we all know. And using speech in a way that's right speech is a whole thing. We could talk about what's right speech, non-harming speech, being wise and careful around intoxicants that can cloud the mind and get us into trouble. You know, you can approach that in a way that can be very unwholesome, in the sense that we can really beat ourselves up for the ways that we fall short, judging ourselves, tearing ourselves down. So even when we approach that, I think the place of compassion for ourselves is the beginning. And we don't have to be so good about it. And we're not going to get it just right. But it's just taking on an aspiration or an intention of self-compassion. Maybe the best we can do is, it just seems like, boy, I'd like to be able to do that. It seems like a good idea. I wish I could do more. And then we just start to do the best we can. And for some of us, we may be, just by doing that, we may start to realize, I'm really rough on myself. My mind says things to myself that I would never say to another person. That's true for lots of people who can just be, you know, their minds can be vicious towards themselves. And then they can beat themselves up because they beat themselves up. And it just goes on and on. We need a lot of compassion for ourselves. That may not be true for everyone. I'm just saying it can be like that. I've talked to many people who deal with that. It's a lot of suffering. By the way, if that is true for you, I would just like to suggest that your mind, just as a little aside here, is the least qualified to judge you. And I'm not, I mean, I'm trying to be a little humorous, but I actually wasn't trying to go for a laugh there. You know why? You're too close to it. You're caught up in it. You can't always see yourself clearly. We're too close into it. And so a lot of times, you know, we're really hard on ourselves for ways that, you know, if it was your best friend or someone you cared about or loved, you would say to them, well, yeah, okay, you know, you got a little like this or you got a little angry. But, you know, gosh, don't be so hard on yourself. Give yourself a break. You know, you're a good person. Just don't beat yourself up so much. But it's not always so easy to do the same thing for ourselves. I think the self-compassion piece is a really big deal. If we start from the place of self-compassion, it doesn't necessarily, it shouldn't lead to complacency. I'm not saying we get into this place of self-acceptance where we say, well, this is how I am, and we stop, and we don't try to move forward in a wholesome sense. I'm suggesting that we do want to move in a positive direction. We do want to clear out the hateful, reactive parts, what in Buddhism would be called greed, hatred, and delusion. The forces that cloud the mind, the forces that just get us caught up in things and be reactive instead of being awake and enlightened and free and open with quiet minds and open hearts. That's the greed, hatred, and the delusion. We don't want to just sit back and stay caught in these same patterns, because that's what's creating all the suffering for us. So yes, we want to move forward and try to free the mind for these things as much as we can. And there's lots of practices. We do have meditation practices, and we reflect on these topics like Dharma talks and many, many different types of practices. But we don't want to move forward out of aversion to where we're at, or out of aversion to ourselves, right? Like, oh, I'm really messed up and this isn't okay and I got to get here because this isn't okay. That's where the should comes in. So it's a real difference, going back to the example here, it's a real difference between, on the one hand, feeling like I got to shove down these feelings, it's not okay to have these feelings, like using my George Bush analogy, or you're using your Clinton or whatever, right? It's not okay to have these feelings. That's really, to me, the flip side of being totally identified with them and saying, oh, of course I have these feelings, and of course I'm full of hate and anger, and we're still caught in some way. That's real different than, on the other hand, just to acknowledge, wow, I've got a lot of hatred in the heart towards this person. This is not the kind of person I want to be. This isn't my aspiration. I want to take action. I want to be involved. I want to try and change things. Having love in my heart doesn't mean I turn into a passive blob. And that actually ties into another point that he made here that I also want to make that I think is very important. But I would worry if the truly compassionate people turned passive in response to Bush and the policies of his administration, because those people wanted to meet certain spiritual standards, accepting change as inevitable, etc. So one thing that's very important, actually crucially important, is that equanimity is not the same as passivity. Equanimity is not indifference. It's not numbness. And it's not passivity. And love and compassion are not either. Equanimity is the quality, it actually brings, it's talked about in many different ways, but I would say it brings two aspects together, synthesizes them. One is being completely very awake and present and aware of what's going on and feeling everything. We don't shut anything away. We really feel what's going on, and right along with it, we're not shaken up by it. We don't lose our center. So it really points to the sort of two ways that there are of being peaceful. One way of being peaceful is to be very calm and still. And all the difficult, agitated mind states just don't come up for us. And then you're peaceful. And that's important, actually, in Buddhist meditation. That's a big piece of the meditation. It happens through these mindfulness practices. We learn how to chill out, cool out, settle down. That's one kind of peaceful. And then there's a second kind that's also very important, and actually is even a deeper kind of peace, which is we may not be feeling chilled out. There may be a lot going on, but underneath all of that is the place that rests at peace in the midst of everything. So the full expression of our being is arising, passing away, it's all happening, and we rest at peace in that. And that would include, if I was in a space like that, even equanimity around having these difficulties that come up, say, in the political example. Be able to go, okay, this is happening. You feel it, it's unpleasant. Hatred in the heart's unpleasant. I don't want to have it. The important point is, if we are caught up in things, what I call being on automatic pilot, which is how most of us probably live most of our lives, you're just reactive to things. You actually can't make choice in how you respond. The way you react may not be a problem. It's just going to depend on how your mind is habituated or conditioned. But what will happen is something will happen, you know, like me, I'll see a photograph of Bush. If I'm not aware of what's happening, this is all old. Now, you know, I'm just all love, love, love when I see him, but if I'm not aware of what was going on, I'm just reactive. I'm just caught up in it. It's a big shift to just know what's happening. And then rather than I can act rather than react, I have some freedom and choice on how to move forward, both in terms of what I do with these difficult states of the mind and heart and how I can get myself more free from them, and in terms of how I choose to act in the world. Likewise, when we're making any action in the world, if we've got equanimity and we've got love and compassion, my experience is rather than becoming more passive, we are naturally more engaged. You're naturally drawn into to connect more and to try to make a difference in whatever ways. It doesn't mean we have to go join some organization. It may just be in the way we work with our families or our coworkers or our neighbors, because we're able to see things more clearly. Rather than being reactive, we're seeing things much more clearly, and our hearts are more open in love and compassion, and we're naturally moved to want to do something. And we're able to make more wise and skillful choices because we're not reactive. And so we can actually have some space there. So someone asked me the question, I was in San Francisco, the same group, and raised his hand. He says, well, you know, and he raised some situation, was asking me, so what's the wise, skillful thing to do? What I said to him was, I said, you know, I can't answer. I don't know the answer for you that's wise and skillful. I can't say that for you. But what I do know is, to the extent that that person and each of us are more awake, in other words, we're more aware, we're more mindful, we're more steady, less reactive, all of these things, we're going to at least have a better chance to make a wise choice in whatever we do, rather than just be caught up in it and react. At least we have a better chance. And then we make the best choice we can. In the future, looking back, it may or may not have turned out to be the most wise thing, but all we have is the tools we have available to us in the moment. And we see things the best we can, and we don't. The good news is you don't have to be more awake than you are, or loving or compassionate or enlightened or any of that than you are. And that includes if anyone here, even if you really don't think you have any of those qualities very much at all. I mean, if you really just think, you know, he's not talking to me. I actually am talking to you. As you direct your mind in whatever ways, those are the qualities that are going to strengthen in you. And so if you come here, for example, to meditate, and we gave just a real very quick instructions on using the breath, we could have spent a lot more time talking about it, but it's just bare bones. And if all you got was, you know, three breaths, and then 15 minutes later you woke up and realized you've been off daydreaming, and then you go, oh, I'm supposed to be back, and you got three more breaths and gone until the bell rang, that's actually enough. Because you don't have to be more present than you are, you don't have to be better than you are. It was the only thing that was important is how did you use the time when you were back, even for those few seconds, when you are awake and present, how do we use the time? It's a good thing that the universe seems to work that way, because if it depended on us using the majority of the time when we're just lost on automatic pilot, we're in big trouble, because you don't even know you're gone. You're just gone. You're just caught up in it. You can't make any choices during those times. It's only when you're aware in the moment. So it really does work. And so that's the good news that we can start just from where we're at. And it really does strengthen and deepen. And naturally, the place of being less reactive, more loving, more compassionate, more awake, more present, less of the time on automatic pilot, and when we are on automatic pilot, we're less deeply lost in it. That grows and deepens over time. And that stream of Dharma starts to wake up and actually care. It doesn't mean you're not a human being, you never get caught. You know, I've been meditating for 37 years and really been very dedicated to it. And it's been utterly transformative in my life. But something was revealed that had been hidden, that I didn't get a chance to see. Oh, and then my wife, who was just really a great teacher to me, she just in her loving way pointed out that, well, you know, it's just an opportunity to see a place that you hadn't seen before. Shifted my whole perspective. There's nothing, rather than something bad or wrong, I have to judge myself, it was, which I knew this, I just got caught in it again. Wow, if this place is in me, and as Joseph Goldstein, many of you have heard him say, if there's places like this in us, we'd rather see it than not see it. So I'm appreciative to that picture. I'm really appreciative of it. I think I'll just stop here. I have some more for next week on a different topic. But we can have some time if anybody wants. So either about what we've talked about tonight or anything that came up around, either questions or if you have anything you want to share or comments.
So tonight you mentioned something regarding the So, sorry about that.
Yeah.
And so it's about like knowing myself, know what we wish to do, and being in love with myself, right? So I quite agree with that. So, and you also mentioned that there might be a lot of sufferings in our lives that sometimes is inevitable, and people need to go through that, and probably mindfulness might be one solution to like helping people overcome those kind of things. So that also implies that sometimes some people who are lucky, they might have less suffering but more joy, and the other group of people, they might have more sufferings than joy. So how do we really, you know, motivate those people, you know, who doesn't really know why they are here, and having the motivation of living on? And also, because I mean, it seems like the moment that we are born, I mean, it's already quite destiny that we are going to need to face all the sufferings, and then we need to learn and put in effort to like overcome all the problems that we will be facing in our life. Okay, so this is my first question. The other second question is that, so once, I mean, without knowing the real reason why we are here, so how could we make the decision for like, you know, having a new generation, you know, knowing that they are going to face the problems in the future? So how, I mean, on what basis we can justify that we can make the decision for them? Because we already know that if you come to this world, there will be suffering and you need to overcome them. And if you are lucky, then everything will be fine. If you are not, then too bad for you. Right. So these are the two questions I would like to seek for some advices.
Yeah. So I want to make sure I'm clear on. So is your first question, was it about for people who tend to not have much suffering in their life, and they seem to, how do you motivate those people? Is that what you were saying? I wasn't. Would you? What was your first question again? Oh, for people who have a lot of suffering. Well. I'm not. Maybe some of you might have some thoughts on that. What all I think about is that suffering is the great motivator for us. I know for myself, unfortunately, I've tended to be a tough case, and so I need the suffering kind of has to hit me over the head again and again, and then I finally get it. Oh! Don't do that. Act, you know, this way. So I think there's two things. I think for people who have a lot of suffering, there's already a motivation to get some relief. That part, I think, is clear. So then it's just a question of what's needed. And what's needed in every situation is going to be different. So for some people, it may be a relief from suffering kind of in the way we talk about in a Dharma sense or in a spiritual sense of freeing the heart and the mind and that kind of level. And really reaching what we would call an unconditional freedom, where we free our hearts and minds, and it's not so much about our external conditions. But there's a whole other conditional level for freeing from suffering that's just as important. If there's someone who doesn't have enough food and their electricity is about to be turned off and everybody's stressed out and yelling and there's crime and, you know, they're living, you know, shootings in their neighborhoods or whatever is going on, it's probably not going to work very well to say to them, you're not going to say to them, well, you know, your problem is you need to just free your mind from clinging. They need food. They need enough clothing. They need safety. That's what's appropriate in that situation for that person, right? So sometimes we need to fix the situation the best we can, and if we can't fix it, there's going to be suffering. And other places, it's a different kind of situation. It may be that it's more of a spiritual suffering. So I think what's important is having the wisdom, and we may not always know, is to know, and this is for ourselves too, for ourselves and others, what's needed. And I think where we get into trouble sometimes, and we all tend to do this, is we think what I really need to do is free my heart and my mind, and I'm busy just trying to change my situation. There'll be many times where we're taking the wrong action. There'll be other times when it's just the opposite, where I think I'm trying to free my heart and mind, and I do need to change the situation. I can give you a perfect example. I was, when my daughter, she's 26 now, when she turned 17, she sat her first 10-day meditation retreat, so I wanted to sit it with her. And I had injured my neck, and I couldn't meditate, and I was having this, not only was it for about 2 or 3 months, it eventually healed up, but it was this nerve pain, if any of you have ever had anything like that, where it was not only the intensity of it, but just the quality of it was radiating. It was just maddening. I could not be present for this pain. I couldn't. And it didn't matter. I could lie down. I couldn't find relief. And pain meds weren't really helping that much. And so this was a long time ago, and I really knew better, but I said I wanted to go. I wouldn't have gone, but I wanted to sit with my daughter. And I said, okay, fine. I'm just going to go, and I'm going to sit, and whatever experiences arise and pass away, that'll be what it is, and I'll just sit and be present here and meditate with her. So I went to meditate. We sat down to meditate. It wasn't even close. I just could not do it. It was way too much for me. And I went to talk to one of the teachers, and he just said, well, you're taking pain meds, right? We should be lying down. Let's get some ice on that. Let's go back to your bed. You know, it was just wasn't any question about being with him because it passed my limit. So one of the important things is to know, for ourselves at least, and it's for others too, where is our edge? If whatever is going on, physical body sensations, states of the mind, the heart, any experiences, if they're too much for us, if they've gone way past whatever our limit is, there's no should be present. You just can't. It's just, you're blown away by it. You're crushed by it. You need to bring down the intensity or fix it somehow to get it back within the range where you can work with it. If you don't, there's no should. It's just, you're going to suffer. So we need to have the wisdom to know. The flip side of it is there's lots of times when things are well within the range when we could work with it. And we're still reactive and trying to fix it and change it. So one of the skills is knowing which, I don't really know if I'm answering your question here, but one of the skills is knowing which side of that edge we're on. And where what will happen to us many times is that we'll either be, there's certain experiences where it's obvious to us either it's way too much, I need to fix it somehow, or this is difficult and challenging, but you know what? I can work with this. I can find the mindfulness. I can find the awareness. I can be present with this and learn to find the freedom and the peace and the non-clinging and the non-reactivity in the face of this. But there's a gray zone there where we may not know where we stand. And so there will be times when we're using the wrong strategy. That's part of learning to just tune into ourselves and coming to know ourselves better over time. And then we'll come to know which is the right strategy for us more and more of the time. I don't know if we'll ever necessarily get it perfect. And the image I used last week was, and I've heard that this is true, that when they're in the airline pilots say, if any of your pilots here, you may correct me if I'm a little off, but it's something like, you know, they're only exactly on course, you know, going across country. I may be a little off, but something like, you know, 1% of the time. And the rest of the time, they're always making these minor adjustments. They're slightly off. So we don't have to be exactly right on. We just have to be tuning into ourselves the best we can, paying attention the best we can, and then using the tools we have, make the little adjustments the best we can. I think that's also for other people. There's two different things. One is when we're doing any kind of taking any action in the world that affects others, whether we're doing social service work, how we're interacting with our families or our coworkers or our neighbors or whatever we're doing, there's knowing what's trying to be as wise as we can about what's skillful.
I don't want to take up too much time, but I mean, it seems like there are so many uncertainties in life, and then you know, we sort of like providing guidelines to other people, but I mean, we cannot. I mean, it's pretty certain that there will be a problems that will be faced in one person's life. And I mean, without the clear knowing where, I mean, in the future what will happen, right? I don't know how we can make the decision to decide, like having a new generation. Having a new generation.
Well, but let me ask a question. I hear what you're saying there. You're exactly right. That's really getting to some real fundamental core Dharma teachings around anicca, impermanence, change. There's an element of uncontrollability to things, uncertainty to things, unreliable quality to everything. So that's built into the fabric of things. And so that's one of the core teachings, is to come to really see how that's true. And then the question is, how do we live in the face of that? And so I think the answer to that is that we don't know the outcome of things. We don't know, but we still know are motivated, if we're motivated out of a care or an intention or an aspiration to relieve suffering for ourselves and for others, then that can inform what are the choices we're making. We can't say what's going to happen for the next generation. But if we can leave the planet cleaner, less polluted, not use up all the resources, have less wars, not fighting over oil or water or I don't know, whatever, all the different things, I think we have a chance to at least, that's the direction I'd like to head. So let's try to do those things without, in the face of uncertainty. One way you can think of, it's not the only way, but one way you can think of Vipassana meditation, insight meditation, is coming to see very, very clearly the truth of that uncertainty, how deep and profound it is in us, way deeper than most of us can get. How unreliable things are, moment to moment to moment, to really see that. And how insubstantial things are, including all our notions of who we are as beings and all of that. That's really what Vipassana is about. And when we really start to get glimpses of that and actually live in the experience of it more and more, some kind of non-clinging or deeper level of letting go happens. It's kind of a relaxing back into that happens because we see we can't control and there isn't anything to hold on to and cling to. And it's out of that place of a deep, just relaxing into, it's really a deep trust in, we kind of rest in the changing flow of life. And then from that place of relaxation, take our action. I think that's really what one way to talk about of all the Dharma teachings. And then it's just, what are tools and techniques to help us deepen into that realization of exactly what you're talking about?